Okay, folks, we are at 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all. And as usual, everybody has the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a question or comment. Remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. We have, first off, let me welcome any guests that we have with us tonight. If you want to join the group, that's great. Don't feel you have to. You can come as a guest, but I paste it into the chat window. Where you can go to join up if you want. It's only $20 a year. And with that, I will pass it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thanks, Chris. We're going to start off with a couple of follow-up items from last week. And one of them was about Firefox. Actually, this is from B, who's freezing to death in the snowy north today. She wanted to know about the new Firefox and the different settings that are available and the add-ons which are being recommended. So I actually have installed Firefox as a secondary browser. I don't use it all the time. I just have it for a very specific purpose. But I used to use it quite a lot, and I did use an add-on. So I decided to go and have a look at these add-ons. And I was looking in particular for one that lets you switch a new tab to a specific page. And because basically I don't use bookmarks. I have local HTML files with a whole bunch of links, which are the links I use all the time. And I basically load that page when I go to a new, I load it as my home page, and I load it also when I go to a new tab. So the sites I want to go to are basically readily available on by one click. And so I'm looking for this new tab add-on, and there are a couple there. Only one of them is shown right here. This new tab override is what I'm looking for. It allows you to set the page that shows whenever you open a new tab. And this is by somebody who, and I don't know, it's Soren, somebody or that. The second one is the developer that I used previously. So I thought I'd give this one a try. So I load her up, and I just have to put in my URL in the magic box. So here I'm putting in a address for a local file. This is my default HTML page. And I try and run it, and boom, it blows up. And now, interestingly, it says that first of all, notice that this add-on was recommended by the new version of Firefox. And yet, the notes that go with it say, access to local files via a URL is no longer possible due to Firefox restrictions. And that's exactly the problem I had a couple of years ago. They did a complete rewrite of Firefox and took away this ability to load local files. So, although this app and the one are recommended add-ons for the new version of Firefox, and basically they're useless because they don't work. At least they don't work for me. So the add-ons remain a mystery to me. I don't understand what Firefox is up to. I also don't understand what the risk is with loading a local file which I developed. And that blows my mind. I can load external files, which other people post all over the internet, but I can't load one that I've developed myself. Well, the answer is I can, of course. My solution is just to replace Firefox with Vivaldi, and Vivaldi is a Chromium-based search engine, web browser, and it doesn't have any problem loading a different page or a local page for me. Okay.
You could try out, there are several Firefox variations like LibreWolf and WaterFox. Maybe they'll let you put in a URL as your default.
And so does Vivaldi. It's just a browser, Tom. It doesn't really matter to me which browser I use as long as it does what I want. I know some of these Firefox things are, better privacy and that kind of stuff, but I'm not terribly concerned because I use a limited number of websites. Okay, moving along, Chris has a follow-up on a question that was asked about weather.
Yeah, so last week at Q&A, I gave a presentation on the setting the weather app, and there was a question about somebody having it display the wrong location. And I recalled vaguely that I had that and fixed it, and I couldn't remember what I did to fix it. So I did a bit of research into it and figured it out. So this was the thing from last week then. So this was Bob Harris, and he gets weather pop up and let me just read the screen here. It was a while since I did this. So that was actually the screen from last week. Next. And then Bob Harris mentioned that he had a problem with it coming up with the wrong location. And so in this intervening week, he actually asked Perplexity AI. He gave him a lot of information because he said it helps with Perplexity give him lots of context. So, but it came down to he's saying that basically it is displaying the current weather, but it's displaying it from Portsmouth, UK. And he wanted to know how to change that info and make it more relevant. In other words, have it display something in Ottawa or Stittsville. Next. So the response he got back was, what would you like to see on your login screen? Well, that's not exactly what he asked, but okay. So he said he wanted the Ottawa weather info, current news, and he's not interested in sports, the NHL scores. Next. So first wrong answer. So the first wrong answer Perplexity AI comes up with is it says press Windows I to get to the settings, go to personalization, click on the lock screen, personalization, turn the toggle switch on to show the lock screen background picture of the sign-in screen. And then under personalize, you put in either Windows Spotlight picture or slideshow. This has absolutely nothing to do with what he's looking for. Next. So it is talking about other aspects of the lock screen that have nothing to do with that. Next. Then the second wrong answer. So it also came up with an answer saying that you could add and customize widgets. So make sure Windows 11 is up to date, and then you enable the widgets using a third-party tool, Vivid tool, that you can get from GitHub for free, and which seemed rather strange. Next. So I thought, download a third-party tool. Well, his widgets are actually already showing, and he said that he told Perplexity AI that he was getting the weather. It's just the wrong location. So maybe that's something to do with if the widgets are disabled somehow, but obviously they're not disabled on Bob's computer. So I count that as a second wrong answer. Next. Third wrong answer. It says to configure the widgets, you go to settings, personalization, lock screen, and enable weather and more on the lock screen background. Next. And that won't fix it either, because obviously he already has that turned on. It's just displaying the wrong location. And in the original query, he said it displays current weather from Portsmouth, UK. And he wanted to say how to change that info to another location. Next. Then we get into the fourth answer, which more than being wrong is incomplete. So it says to customize the weather widget. And I've highlighted in here that it says, ensure your location settings are set to Ottawa to get local weather updates. Now, what I say about that being really incomplete is the fact that there are quite a few places in the Windows interface where you would actually change location information. Next. So technically it's correct, but how do you do that? They didn't actually give you any information on how to set the location settings, and it's a very specific location setting that you actually have to play with. Next. So here's the right answer, and Perplexity AI never got around to doing this. So if you are getting the wrong location on the weather widget, on the lock screen, this is how you can fix it. So you press Windows plus W, and that'll open up the widgets panel if it's not already displayed on your computer. I disabled it on my computer because I generally hate the widgets. So that'll get the widgets panel to come up. Next. And then if you don't have underneath widgets weather showing, it'll be a long scrollable panel that you have there typically. And so you can scroll through it. If you don't see weather, then you click on the plus sign. Next. Then it'll come up with the available widgets that you can actually add to that panel. So you scroll down and click on weather. Next. And then click on pin. which will end up pinning it to that widget panel. Next. So now if you go into the widget panel by hitting Windows plus W, you'll actually see the weather. And in this case here, I'm actually seeing it as Kitchener. So I click on the meatball menu. Next. And then this is an aside, but you can also select the unit. So if it happens to be displaying in Fahrenheit and you want it in Celsius, you can select that. But more so, next, you click on Customize Widget. Next. And then, in this case here, I have Kitchener and Timbuktu are the only two locations that I have actually showing. So next. So search for Ottawa. It'll come up with a number of hits. I could actually narrow it down to the Marriott Hotel in Ottawa or an Islamic school in Ottawa. But I just want Ottawa in general, so I click the plus beside the word Ottawa. And then the important thing here is that you click on that little house, which will set that as your primary location. You can see in the screen that it's showing right now that Kitchener is actually got a bigger house than the other ones, and that's because it is the default location at this point in time. Next. Now, you can remove Timbuktu unless you really want the weather in Timbuktu or any other location that you have in there by clicking on the minus sign, and that will remove it from the availability. Next. But now there's a weird one. I can't remove Kitchener. So if I hover over the minus, it actually says cannot remove. And I've searched a bunch on that to say, how can I actually remove a location from there? And I've yet to come up with a solution for it. I'm not overly worried because I've now set Ottawa as my primary location. And so that will cause it to come up on the lock screen as opposed to Kitchener. Next. Now, there's lots and lots of stuff out there about the weather widget detecting wrong location. Here's one from the Microsoft Answers Forum. And so it said recently the weather widget has started to display the weather from a wrong location. This was from November of 2023, but a lot of stuff going on in the spring as well. Next. And it was interesting, one of the replies to that was that somebody said the Microsoft technician, they had the same problem. Microsoft technician that they contacted suggested reinstall Windows 11 using the repair option, which they say after they did it in the final reboot, PC was back to normal, the weather widget and clock were working properly, all of their apps and data were all intact and so forth like that, and they say that the Windows reinstall with the repair option actually did work for them. Now, personally, I don't know if I would go to that extreme just to get the weather for Ottawa on the lock screen, but there you have it, something that is on the Microsoft Answers Forum that claims to fix the problem as well. So that's all I have to say on that.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I just want to know, what do you have against Kitchener?
Nothing against Timbuktu either.
Yeah, it was named Berlin.
Okay. I have nothing against Berlin either.
Okay, thanks a lot, Chris. That's interesting stuff. Okay, moving along then. We had a question at the last session about backgrounds on Zoom, and an email came in and said that this individual would be interested in knowing how many people use a background on Zoom without showing their messy homes. Their home is messy, apparently, so I haven't included their name on the slide here. But this individual doesn't sign into Zoom. They use the link in the meeting meeting announcement to log in using the browser, and doesn't know if they have to sign into an account to use the background. Well, in actual fact, you do. If you want to use virtual backgrounds, then you need to be using the Zoom client, I believe. So you can download the Zoom client from zoom.us. Just go to the resources tab. You can install the client. And once you have the client, then you have the gear icon in the top right-hand corner here. And that is to access the settings. When you get the settings screen, the second screen pops up. Go down the menu here to background and effects. And that will allow you to set the background. Now, A number of years ago, I talked about this, 2021, I guess, how you add a virtual background and what to do about profile pictures. And basically, you can use one of these predefined images down here, or you can use this plus sign and add an image of your own. And here you've got a picture of a cloud formation in the Andes, I think that is. And so it's quite flexible in terms of what you'd like to do. And then more recently, Linda did a much more extensive presentation. This is in 2023. And she was interested in having people use profile pictures in the intro. So rather than just having a black thumbnail, you actually get some, you actually get your choice of a picture. You can also change your name on the screen. And then you can do things like add the virtual background, for example. So, if you follow that link, you will find Linda's instructions on how to deal with profile photos and how to edit them and make them smaller and crop them and do all those kind of wonderful things in terms of photo editing. And then also there's a whole raft of information on how to add a virtual background. And notice now that there is a blur option. So if you want to blur your messy house, I guess you can do that by blurring the image from your webcam. But you also have the option of using all these other different images or uploading your own. Okay, so that's the Zoom client part three. I don't think I have anything else unless people have suggestions what they'd like to hear about.
Nothing so far in the chat.
Okay, so moving along then, Chris has got some information on a YouTube video.
Yeah, there's a number of these PC Fix-It utilities out there, and there's a few that are for free, and there's quite a few that are paid utilities. I've always had a little bit of a hate on for them. I don't think that they really buy you an awful lot, and so free ones, okay. They might be useful. For me personally, I think that the paid ones are overpriced if they charge anything a cent or up. So I think that everyone is annoyed, though, if and when their PC slows down, and they'd really like to have it that they can speed things up. And there are a lot of tools out there that claim to be able to speed it up. Some of the vendor claims that come right off of the website intelligently detect and resolve PC slowdowns with one click. That sounds really good. 200% faster PC, that's wonderful. Who wouldn't want 300% faster surfing? Remove useless files, clean registry to free up more disk space and reduce PC crashes. That all sounds pretty good. Repair and replace damaged or missing OS operating system files. Okay. Optimize the Windows registry. Check for invalid corrupt registry entries. All of those things sound, you know, like they're really good. Next. If you wonder whether PC cleanup utilities or fix-it utilities work, I highly recommend that you check out this video from Linus Sebastian at Linus Tech Tips. And the title of it is, My PC is Slow, Can These Speed Up Tools Fix It? And he actually went out and he bought a number of them, and they actually compared them. A lot of the video is talking about gaming PCs, and so a lot of it is not, you know, your sort of general computer use, but I think all of his advice actually applies. Next. So some of his highlights, he said that most review sites that he went to recommended the same handful of tools over and over and over again. And he said maybe that might seem like a case of, well, okay, everybody agrees that they're good. But he says you dig a little bit deeper on it and maybe not so much. One of the cons that was listed under there is he said that all of the ones that he saw that were being recommended over and over again, all of them said Windows offers comparable built-in tune-up tools. And so, you know, some of them, he said, they actually do work pretty well, but you can achieve similar results without spending any money at all. Next. So would Linus Sebastian recommend any of these? And he said that if you're watching this video, it's probably not for you. And that's because his audience of several million viewers, they're mostly fairly technical people. And so he thinks that most people that are watching it, probably not. But if you are bothered by somebody who always needs to update drivers, delete useless startup items, things like that, then maybe they could help those people. Next. But he said, if you don't mind spending 5 minutes a month, he said, there's a number of fast and easy tricks that you can get similar results for free. So the ones that he listed were going into Task Manager and on the Startup tab, checking to see if there are some programs that are starting up when Windows starts up every single time, and it's just slowing down the startup and probably bogging down the performance of Windows ongoing. And so some of them, you might be okay with just starting up that app manually when you actually need to use it, as opposed to having it running all the time. Uninstalling programs you no longer need. That's a really great thing. You can clear up disk space. You can clear up potential security vulnerabilities by not having a program around if a vulnerability is found in it. So if you don't use a program, get rid of it. Defrag, if you've got a hard disk drive or you run the defrag utility, it'll actually just run the trim function for solid-state drives on your drive, and that can speed up your hard drive or solid-state drive operations. Run the disk cleanup utility. And he said then, it may be just time for an upgrade. And the one that he pointed out, and I think this really makes a lot of sense, he says a lot of these tools that are doing this speed up process and that, they're really targeting systems that have a hard disk drive. And he says for the price of the software, you can just buy an SSD instead and get performance boost right across the board. And I happen to agree with that idea. Next.
I agree too. If anybody's still using a hard drive, a spinning hard drive, get an SSD. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Okay, so what do I actually use? And so I use CCleaner, and it is available. There's a free version. I just run the free version. I don't think anybody needs to run the paid version on it, although they'll periodically nag you to upgrade. You can just ignore that. But I'm very selective in what I use CCleaner for. Linus Sebastian actually poo-poos CCleaner a little bit. And the reason that he does so is because it can do an awful lot of stuff that you probably actually don't want it to do. So you have to be a little bit careful in selecting only the things you want CCleaner to do and avoid checking off boxes of things that you don't want CCleaner to do. So the ones that I do, I have it empty all the browser caches and compact all of the browser databases, all in one fell swoop. Removing temporary files, I have it do that. I have it empty the recycle bin. I have it delete memory dumps. Memory dumps can be into the gigabytes in size. So they're just using up useless space. It's information that is available or relevant to the developer of an app that crashes, but I've never had an app developer ask me for a memory dump. So you can just get rid of those. Check disk file fragments are areas of the disk that have been allocated to a file, but no particular file in the allocation system. So it's basically useless space that is being used up, so deleting those is good. If you have an NVIDIA video card, if you have old NVIDIA install files kicking around, those can be about a half a gig each, and so having it delete those automatically for me is a great idea. Now, all of those things, I can do it manually. It would probably take me about maybe 10 or 15 minutes to go through all of those steps and do them one by one. I can go into CCleaner, and I can do it with just a couple of clicks, and I'm done. And the nice thing is that CCleaner will pop up and tell me when it can clean up a significant amount of disk space. And so usually that runs into over a gig of space that could be freed up, and it'll pop up in the system tray and just tell me, you know, CCleaner's found such and such, and you can just click there. It'll load up CCleaner. You click the Analyze button. You click the Cleanup button, and you're done. And so just a couple of clicks, it'll do it all for you, which is really, really nice. Next.
Yes, now, temporary files, does that include Windows Update? Because sometimes...
No.
I know it's supposed to get rid of them automatically, but I often find gigabytes of stuff in Windows Update.
Yeah. No, this is strictly the temporary directory in Windows. I believe it doesn't clean up any other areas at all.
Okay.
So a warning again with CCleaner, it can clean up lots and lots of stuff. So only select those things that you want to be cleaned up. The nice thing is CCleaner will remember your chosen settings from time to time. And so each time you go in, once you set them once, you just click the Analyze, check what it's going to clean up, and then click on the Cleanup button, and away you're done. Now, there are weird things that it can do, like, you know, recently used file pointers. You know, last used download locations. It can erase things like that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that, to me, it's not worthwhile. Or if it's offering to clean up cookies, it could actually delete cookies that you actually want left on your computer. So I only have it clean up the things that I noted on there, and those are all really safe, other than the idea of the temporary files. It's up to you, but I find that temporary files, I never go back to look to temporary files or the recycle bin. I don't really use the recycle bin. I shift delete things, so it bypasses the recycle bin anyways. And so those for me are all safe to just clean up any time at all. Next. So there's where you can get CCleaner, and I have pasted that into the chat window as well. Next. Next tool I use is Disk Cleanup, and Alan alluded to this because the Windows update files will not be cleaned up by CCleaner, which surprised me a little bit, but at any rate, it doesn't. So Disk Cleanup comes with Windows. Next. When you go into it, make sure you click on the Cleanup System Files right away. Next. The reason why you want to do that is you can see here, before clicking on the cleanup system files, it was going to be able to clean up 120 megabytes of the selected options that were done there. When I clicked on the cleanup system files, that jumped to 1.78 gigabytes. And that was primarily because of, next, the device driver packages. And whenever you select something in there, you can click on it and you can read the description to see whether this is something you want to get rid of or not. In this case here, it's actually telling you that when a driver gets updated on your system, Windows keeps the previous driver in case you want to go back and roll back if you have a problem with the new version of the driver. If you don't want to be able to roll back, that old version of the driver is just sitting around taking up space. So you can select that option, and in this case here, I'd free up an additional 1.62 gigabytes of disk space with the downside that if I do have a problem with a driver update, then I can't roll back to the previous version. So I might have to do a reinstall of that particular driver or something like that. But personally, I've never had an issue where I actually had to roll back to a previous version of the driver. If you think that you might want to do this, don't do it for, say, a week after you do a driver update. And then if everything is working fine, old driver files, you don't need them. So, but the long and short on it is read the descriptions, and if you don't understand an option, don't select it. Also, don't select it if it's only going to save you, you know, something like delivery optimization files. It's going to save me 15.3 megabytes. Now, I'm not sure what exactly delivery optimization files do, but it sounds like a good thing. Optimization is always a good thing, and it's only using 15.3 megabytes. So what am I worried about? I'm not going to worry about cleaning up that out of 1.78 gigabytes. Next.
Well, you've got 2.6 kilobytes of offline web pages, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Terrible. Okay, the next thing I use is PC Manager. And this is free from the Microsoft Store. It used to be it was only available on a Japanese Microsoft website or yeah, I think it was Japanese, Chinese maybe. At any rate, it has recently, in the last year, moved to the Microsoft Store. And so you can just search in the Microsoft Store for Microsoft PC Manager to find it. It is somewhat involved, and there's a lot of different areas you can click on to dig down into things. It does provide really, really good insight into disk clutter. So where is your disk space really being chewed up? Now, I rarely use this, but I probably should actually use it more often because it does allow you to spend a little bit of time digging down and finding out where all your disk space is going away. Next. So again, if you want it, just go to the Microsoft Store and search for PC Manager. Next. Now, registry cleaners. So a lot of the PC speed up utilities will claim to be able to clean the Windows registry. And CCleaner is guilty of this as well. It's not under the regular cleanup part. It's a separate area you have to go to say clean up the registry. And I say registry cleaners are snake oil. There is the first link there is from Microsoft themselves. And the highlights of that link is that Microsoft does not support the use of registry cleaners. Microsoft has no responsibility for any issues that are caused by you using a registry cleaning utility. And Microsoft cannot guarantee that problems that are caused by registry cleaning utilities can be solved. It could require a reinstall of Windows if a bad thing happens. Some of the things that can happen that are not usually terribly egregious, but they can cause you headaches later on down the line, is if it comes across an area of the registry where it says, oh, there's this stuff that's not being used, and it deletes it. And then some program you have decides that it has to query that particular registry key, and it doesn't find that registry key because your cleaner has deleted it. That sort of idea can come up. And the long and short of it is that everything that they find in the registry that they claim to be problems is usually, almost always, it is totally innocuous stuff. It's not going to harm Windows. It's not going to slow down Windows. It is sitting there. It might be totally useless, but it's not doing any harm at all. An interesting thing was that, and I've got a whole bunch of links of all their of various things pointing to the idea that registry cleaners are not good things to use. An interesting one is that last one, and that's somebody who took a brand new Windows installation. He ran CCleaner on it, and it found 63 registry issues. And the Wise registry cleaner on a brand new Windows installation found 139 registry issues. I don't think that Microsoft is installing a brand new Windows installation with problems in the registry. So they're non-issues is really what it comes down to. Next. I decided to take it one step further. I asked Perplexly AI, are there any registry cleaners that are safe to use? And their highlight was no consensus that registry cleaners are reliable or safe to use. They highlight that Microsoft does not recommend or endorse them. Any claims to system improvement are negligible at best. It can delete required registry entries, and it can cause system instability crashes or making Windows unbootable if they do something wrong. It could corrupt Windows in a way that manifests itself months later down the line. So you can't even point back to the fact that, oh, it's because I did a registry cleaner, you know, 2 months ago that caused this problem. They say cleaners like, and they highlight several of them, CCleaner, Wise Registry Cleaner, OSLogic Registry Cleaner. They do highlight the risks and the lack of Microsoft endorsement. So if even they are saying that there are risks, well, I don't particularly want to run them. The overwhelming advice from Microsoft and most experts, avoid registry cleaners. None can be considered reliable or safe, and the consensus is that they provide no real value, and they can break or destabilize Windows. It's best to leave the registry alone. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. There was a comment from Serge Eric about cleaning up computers in general, not necessarily registry. He says, I now use Keresh PC Doctor for all its options. And he gives a link there. I personally don't know that package, but yeah, clearly it's a full-featured cleanup utility, I guess. Tom echoes, using an SSD to replace a hard disk gives you a big boost. And there's a question here from Marvo about changing your name in a Zoom session. He says, when I join entering the login manually, I get a chance to rename himself before starting. And he can change it once he's on the session without a problem. But if he attends by way of a link, presumably over a browser, he gets a default ID, an account ID, and can't change it after he starts the meeting. Any thoughts on that, Chris?
I've never run into it myself, but I'm typically the person who's starting up the session, so I certainly wouldn't expect a problem there. Mavo, I see that you currently are named correctly. I presume that's because you changed it before starting the session. I haven't seen it myself. Has anybody else had a problem renaming themselves if they came in from a link? If anybody has any ideas on that, we can come back to it if you want to throw it into the chat. Or, oh, Natalie says joins link with the OPC link. Change name after joined. So Natalie doesn't have any problem with it. I don't know. I'll see if I can find any information on that. Carol Peterson said she just did that as well. So it looks like it might be something particular to your situation somehow, but I'll look into it if nobody else has comes up with an answer during tonight's session.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have a video somehow. I switched from my professional computer to my personal sometimes. I'm going to have to readjust things. Yeah, I use Carriage Doctor. I've been using it for many years. And as you know, I have hundreds of programs installed on my computer. Mm-hmm. And it's been, I left CCleaner when they were hacked. And yeah. I came back to them for a year after that. And then I left them again for Carriage Doctor. Carriage Doctor has a lot of options, more than CCleaner. So that's the reason I use it. Also, I update my drivers with Carriage Doctor, as you can also do with CCleaner. And it's as reliable as CCleaner as far as updating drivers is concerned. Just one note, though, I've left completely iOBIT products. They are very strong in pushing their products all over the web.
Yeah.
But I've left them because twice in many years I've used their driver updater and they crashed my computers, Windows 10, Windows 11, to a point where I really was, it even affected the hardware. So somehow, I don't know how, but on both of my computers, Windows 10 and Windows 11 that I use, iOBIT driver updater, it's been problems. So I accept this company completely.
So yeah, Linus Sebastian also says that he can't recommend iOBIT.
No, I would not. And also, OSLogix has had problems before, legal issues as well, so I've left them as well. And Carriage Doctor is a good tool for me. Just want to tell you, to let you know that.
Yeah, Greg Serjevic is avoiding CCleaner since they got hacked. One question for you, Serjevic. The Carriage PC, is that available for free of charge, or is there a free version?
There's a free of charge version, and there's a 1, 2, 3, 4 year version, and I think 4 years, $25, something like that.
Okay.
But it comes once in a while on the free sites that I talked about in the past.
Okay.
So you can get a year with that free, you know, and try it out and, you know.
Yeah, one thing with CCleaner for their driver updater, that is a paid-only option on CCleaner. So you can't do that through the free version.
Yeah. I had a premium version that I paid $1 for a couple of years back. A legitimate site offering me for $1, I got it, and now when they ask for renewal, it was 100 and something. I said, well, forget it.
Yeah, that's a lot. Okay, thanks, folks. I see a couple of more where people were able to rename themselves. I don't see anything yet from anybody saying that they've had a problem or been able to fix the problem. So.
Okay, so moving along, I have a YouTube tech video which I thought was interesting. And this is Ask Leo. He's been around for a long time with a website. And now has this YouTube channel where he has a lot of information about various Windows issues. And I thought this one was interesting, why I stopped using Google Search. And he basically says, his complaint really is that the search results aren't really search results. And when you look at when you ask any question on Google, you get a whole bunch of results which are sponsored. And by sponsored, what Google means is that these are advertisements. So he makes the comment that some people say that Google is an ad delivery company that occasionally shows search results. Yes, that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but clearly there are lots of adverts rather than regular search results. He also points out that Microsoft Bing search engine basically does the same thing, but rather than say sponsored, it does actually tag the initial results it shows as ads. So it shouldn't be a norm that these things are actually paid ads. And even DuckDuckGo, which people swear by as privacy and security oriented, it is actually ad supported. So they do show adverts because that's how they pay for DuckDuckGo. But they mark them as ads. And the ads are based on the search terms that you actually use. And in particular, he says that the ads don't follow you around the internet as some of these links that you search for do. When you go to a different website, the same ads pop up over and over and over again because you looked for them a few minutes ago. If you really hate ads, he suggests there's a company called Kaji.com, K-A-J-G-I, which has no adverts, but you have to pay for it. So, for example, if you pay $5 a month, and that's probably US, I didn't check, then you can do 300 searches, and there are different plans for different amounts of money and different amounts of searches. He also pointed out there are some other browsers which are maybe better in terms of showing adverts. One of the interesting ones I thought was AOL, America Online. You remember they used to give away discs and CDs and trying to get people to sign up to their server. Apparently they're still around. And then a couple of others which we heard about on this Q&A sessions, Brave, which people like the browser. Apparently they have a search engine as well. And Bob Harris will be happy to know that one of the suggestions was to use Perplexity AI as a search engine rather than just an AI provider. Tom says what ads? He uses uBlock Origin and that gets rid of it, all the adverts.
But it does not get rid of the search results that are advertisements. So when you go on and you do a search at Google and the top of the page, the links that you see there, they are ads. They will not be blocked by uBlock Origin.
I haven't seen any ads on Google myself, but I do use some other browser add-ons that I think probably get rid of the Google sponsored things.
Oh, okay.
I'll send a list over the forum of the add-ons I use in Firefox. I only use Chrome right now. I'm only using Chrome for photos because it runs very fast and it accesses all my photos that are stored on Google. So otherwise, I use a variety of browsers, mainly Firefox, and it's very safe. And I don't see any ads. I once in a while I see an ad. Once in a long, long while.
Okay, going back to Google, just like Microsoft, Mr. Google knows best, and he wants you to log into your Google account all the time and everywhere you go. I see pop-ups all over the place, all over my websites, on my web browser, and especially on my smartphone. Turns out when you do a search to try and disable these login pop-ups, you find out that some people find them rather annoying. I didn't include the link here, but if you search for something, you'll probably find it. He wasn't very pleased with Mr. Google putting up pop-ups. Now, the question is there a fix? And it depends where you look. How to Geek says maybe there is. Here's how to turn off the sign in with Google prompt on websites. And you basically launch the launch Google, go to My Account, navigate to this, go through these steps right here, buried in the weeds, find the gear icon, which is the settings, and basically disable this sign in prompts thing right here. And sure enough, here is my Google account with the going down to that settings page and the sign in prompts, except it says I'm disabling Google to display a sign in prompt on Android, not necessarily on everything. And if I want to manage third party sign ins on Chrome, then I have to go and look at Chrome. So maybe that's a fix. And then again, maybe it isn't. This BGR, I forget what that, what that stands for now. Anyway, he basically says that you used to be able to disable the feature from your Google account, but he's now discovered that Google has removed that feature. So he says you can't turn them off. So if anybody knows how to definitely turn them off, let us know, because I'm going to be turning them off ASAP. Okay, one of the questions that came into the suggestion box recently was somebody who says he spent lots of years doing basic computing tasks, but most of the time he finds that very challenging. And he's thinking that Chris and I should go back and include some really basic topics in future Q&As. Because he finds that the items that we usually discuss are quite advanced. Now, the problem Chris and I have is we don't know what people need to know in terms of what is basic and what's not. So we're answering questions that people ask, finding topics that we think are interesting. But if we're not answering the question that you think is a basic thing that you need to understand, it's because you haven't told us. So here's the answer. Here's this little postcard. You basically put down your wish list, the three things that you really want to know about Microsoft Windows or Android smartphones or anything that's really computer related and very, very basic. And put your wish list on these three dots and send it to us at suggestion box. And we'll be more than happy to provide some information or find somebody who can provide some relevant information. But if we're not covering the basic things which you think we should, it's really because you haven't told us what they are. So here's your chance. Okay, so now we're into we're almost in the last 10, we're in the last 12. And if anybody has any other questions or things that they'd like to share, now is the time. I think we've covered everything that was in the chat, Chris.
I think so. Yep.
I have a question. I have an esoteric question. I've managed to create a directory called null, and I can't delete it.
Yeah. Null, for anybody who doesn't know, null is actually considered to be a device by the operating system. And so you can send a file to null and it basically just throws it in the bit bucket, disposes of it unceremoniously. That is interesting. I've never heard of anybody doing that. I'm surprised that the operating system let you create it. And I'm not surprised that it doesn't want you to delete it. But that's an interesting dilemma.
I created it, I think, by using either Xcopy or Robocopy to copy files to a I tried to copy them to null to basically fill up my 64 gigabytes of cache that Windows does for files. Okay. And to speed up later operations. But it wouldn't do it directly. So I put in the /null, and then it did it. But now I have a null directory.
That's an interesting one. I bet you there's nobody on the call tonight who has an answer for that. If you think that it was created by Robocopy, maybe a robocopy operation that syncs two directories and would cause that directory to be deleted. Maybe it can delete it if it created it.
Actually, my plan is to use FUBAR 2000 when it comes across an empty directory that's empty of all files, and you've deleted all the music or the audiobook files in it. It offers to delete the directory tree back up to where it isn't empty. So I'm going to try that next.
Yeah. Let us know if it works.
Into Linux with that. I don't know. Does Linux have a null device?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it does.
That probably wouldn't work.
I think most operating systems have such a thing. I think Unix and Linux and others have this null because it's so handy. In fact, anybody familiar with IBM mainframes? They have a useful utility that's basically used to allocate files on different devices. But the actual utility is named IEF-BR14. IEF is kind of an IBM prefix. And BR14 says branch to the contents of register 14, which is the return address of a subroutine, of that subroutine. It goes back to where it came from. In other words, IEF-BR14 does absolutely nothing but return to it. It's like null, but it's not for files. It's for... it is the smallest, shortest program you will ever see.
So Carol has a question here, Chris. She did a presentation today, hooked up the computer to an HDMI projector, and playing PowerPoint with the presenter view. It showed on the screen, but not the computer. Was it hooked up backwards or something?
Yeah, I saw that come into you and I via email earlier tonight, and a little bit of a puzzle. Before we spend any more time on this, I don't want to detract from that, but I don't want anybody to go away. There is one more item that we have coming up that I think people will find amusing and interesting, so don't go away. But this particular issue, I'm presuming that the...
I didn't know if there was an input or an output, or is it just...
No.
There's only one hookup for the HDMI. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's only an out on a laptop. Okay. So I can't see it that.
Four type things, Chris, where you disable one of the screens?
Well, I was thinking that, but I'm presuming that you, Carol, you had the PowerPoint was displaying correctly on the laptop screen when you... go into present mode, and then when you go into present mode, it blanks the laptop screen, and you get presenter view as opposed to the slides viewing on the other screen.
And it still showed in proper on my computer, just the presenter view was showing on the screen.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you were getting presenter view basically in both, or?
No.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Did you try just toggling on and off the toggling presenter view off and then toggling it back on again?
I tried to go out and come back, but then I used printed words. I just didn't know if there was an input or an output. If there's anything else.
No, okay. It's not that. So the first thing I would have tried, I think, is just going into the slideshow menu. Turn off presenter view and then turn presenter view back on. Might have been somehow confused about, you know, what the screens were and just toggling it off and on might fix it up. Other than that, I really don't know.
Okay. All right. I didn't know either.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I've never come across that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can try it again, Carol, by just putting in another display and seeing if it works properly or not.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay, well, while people are thinking about questions, let's go on and see about this next item. First of all, next week is June the 12th, which is our regular monthly meeting, and we don't have a monthly meeting as such. What we have is our pizza queue, our pizza party. It's going to be at Britannia Park in the west end of Ottawa. And we've reserved the picnic station, which is the trolley station, the old trolley station. And if you want to attend, if you're a member and want to attend, you want to bring a guest, then please register by email at the address shown right here. And we'll be happy to see you there next Wednesday. But now, Chris, I think, has some additional information, right?
Yes. Now, Bob has taken great delight in trying to embarrass both Alan and myself in recent Q&As, and so I'd like to return the favor to him. So we have a little bit of a reminder about our pizza party from our own AI guru and crooner extraordinaire, and we'll see if we can get him to stand up next Wednesday and entertain us all with the following material. Now, before we go on, I presume that you did actually select the share sound, Alan?
I have indeed. I just turned
okay.
Okay.
So what this came about, came in from Bob Harris, and he took the text from the newsletter about the pizza party. He fed that into Perplexity AI, and he asked it to make the lyrics for a song. Then he went over to Suno, which can actually make a song out of any text you feed it, and he fed all of those lyrics that were generated by Perplexity AI into Suno and asked Suno to make a song, and to the delight of all of us here, the following.
It's that time of year when the season's ending. Our cog members are all attending a night of fun, a night of cheer. The annual pizza party is finally here. Pizza, pizza, it's time to celebrate. June the 12th, mark your calendar. Pretend you're part where we'll all gather. Under the shelter, rain or shine. Gathering together, hand in hand. June the 12th, mark your calendar. Pretend you're part where we'll all gather. Under the shelter.
I think Linda has a portable microphone and speaker, and if we can cajole Bob into actually singing it at the pizza party, Bob, you have a week to practice.
I'll do what I can. Thank you.
That's great. It was pretty amazing that Suno actually came up with that from the tech. Well, that Perplexity AI came up with the words for it, and that Suno then made the song out of it. In my follow up, I actually found another music generative site, that Udio, UDIO. If anybody is interested in having a site generate music for you, that I think you can get a number of ones done. The problem with Suno is if you create an account there, you basically get the ability to create one song for free, and then you have to pay anything beyond that. Whereas at least Udio, they have a certain number of credits that you can get, and they regenerate every week or month or whatever, something like that. So you can actually continue to use it for free in a limited sense. So I think that's all we have for tonight. So thanks very kindly for everybody for showing up, and I hope you found it useful, and I hope we see everybody at the pizza party next week.
And finally, just remember, this is the last call. This is the last meeting. We won't have anything else online between now and next Wednesday. So if you really want to go to that pizza party and bring your guest, and register by email, and we'll see you there.
We don't have to bring anything, right? We don't have to bring plates or forks or
nope,
cups.
Nothing at all.